Good morning. I'd like to say something this morning about forgiveness and the unrepentant messmaker. The entire message of the Bible is about separation, and it's about judgment, and it's about forgiveness. And it's about reconciliation. Our challenge is and always has been taking the things that we learn in our head and bringing them into our life so that it actually impacts our lifestyle. And it's that way with a lot of things, like exercise. Does anybody in here know you're supposed to exercise? What's the matter with us? Is it our legs won't exercise? That's not our problem. Generally speaking, if we tell our legs to move, they'll move. Well, then what's wrong with us? Well, what's wrong with us is not that we can't exercise. The problem is we can't want to exercise. So we don't really need physical therapy in order to be able to move our legs. We need therapy in order to want to exercise. So it's the same thing with eating right. Anyone? It's one thing to know that we're supposed to do something, and then the other, it's quite another thing to be able to have the power to do it and to want to do it all the time. It's the exact same way with forgiveness. Forgiveness is kind of hard to get a handle on because most of it happens in our heads. Now, you can forgive a debt, like somebody owes you $20, and you can say, well, you don't owe me that anymore, and you can still hate the guy. And so you can actually forgive a debt and it not impact your lifestyle very much. But I submit to you, you can't forgive from your heart and it not impact your lifestyle. And that's what I want to learn how to do, is to forgive from my heart. Jesus had some instruction regarding that. Children know how to do it. I was a kid one time, and I had a buddy named Raymond Gunter. All my buddies aggravated me in those days. But Raymond did in particular. I was waiting on the school bus. I think I was in third grade. And you had to be in line in the school bus. Teacher expected you to act right while you're waiting on the school bus. And Raymond was right in front of me or behind me, and he was aggravating me. And I don't even remember what he was doing, but he was my best friend, but he was making me mad at him. So when he got on the bus, he got on ahead of me, and he sat down on the left-hand little old seat right there. And when I walked past him, I just went, whop, and I just hit him right side of the head. Well, I didn't expect him to cry and make all that big of a fuss. But he started crying. I got in trouble, and school bus driver got on to me. And the next day, me and old Raymond Gunter were best friends again. And some kid moved down from a weird, wild, long, faraway place called Massachusetts one time, and he talked real funny, and I couldn't understand him half the time. But he kind of a big boy, and he kind of had an attitude, and he walked around people, you know, anytime somebody did something that might offend him, he said, man, I'll flip and belt you one time. This was about the fourth grade or something like that. I'll flip and belt you one. What's that? Well, anyway, he flipped and belted people around, and then he and I had a little bit of a round of it, and we ended up being best friends until he moved. Eighth grade, Claude Brawner was my buddy. Claude was, this is one of those love-hate type deals. My daddy and mommy bought me a 410-gauge shotgun for my 10th birthday. And that was just about like buying the Taj Mahal for somebody. And I really did like that gun, and Claude didn't have a gun. And he wanted to go hunting one day with me, and he came over, but I had to split wood, firewood. And I couldn't go hunting with him. And he started in on me about, why can't you go hunting with me? Why can't you go hunting with me? He's my best friend. And I got mad at him because I expected him to pick up a splitting maul and help me with the firewood so we could go hunting. And he wouldn't do it. He just kept ragging me about, why don't we go hunting? Well, he got mad, and I did too. So he said, I'm going home. And he started walking off. But problem with it was that he had my shotgun shells with him. And they were in a little leather fringe bag. Because I thought at that point I was the reincarnation of Daniel Boone. And I was I had everything rigged up like that. I said, hey, you leave my shotgun shells here. So he had already started walking off. He was about 20 feet away. And so he just got that bag of shotgun shells and he threw them back at me. And they hit the ground and all my beautiful red paper shotgun shells went everywhere on the ground. Boy, I was mad at him. And so I went up there to him, and we had done a good deal of wrestling around, so I just threw him down on the ground, threw him down. And he got up, and I threw him down again. And then he got up, and he started swinging at me. And we never had come to fisticuffs before. And so he swung at me and came at me, and I somehow or another I threw him down one more time. But then he came up really wanting to hit me hard, and so I started backing up. And I had on a pair of lace-up work boots, and I tripped on myself, backing up. And I fell just flat on my back. And now I'm looking up at Claude Bronner, and Claude is really mad at me. And boy, he just had a look of rage on his face. And he came at me, and right before kicking me, I kicked him one time when he was down. I forgot about that. I threw him down and kicked him. That's when he got really mad at me. But he came at me, and right before jumping on me, he just stopped, and he turned around, and he started crying. Well, that's the end of all that. Next day, we were best friends. Children, somehow or another, know how to do that. They know how to forgive. Didn't Jesus say something about children in the kingdom of heaven? If you don't become like a little child, you can't be part of the kingdom of heaven. Well, tomorrow for a child is a long, long time away, and they're able to forgive. But when we grow up, it's not that simple, because now we understand all the nuances behind it. Now we know how to keep a grudge for years and years and years, because aren't there varying degrees of injury? Don't you just know that some injuries are okay and others are just terrible? And so some injuries require a resentment for a little while and others require a long, long time to stay mad. And there's various degrees of frequency. Like, how often is this guy going to hurt me and me just put up with it? And then there are these casual type problems that we have, like on the road, somebody cuts you off and whoa, you flare like that, or in the checkout line or something like that. And then there's that most troublesome of creatures, the unrepentant mess maker. That's the guy in your life who just won't act right, and you're trying to live with them. What do we do with those people? I submit to you that the great big resentments of life are not the biggest ones that we have to deal with. It's the everyday ones of trying to live in a family or live among people that are just on and on and on and on. And this person never does seem to repent enough to get her done, enough to do right. And they think the same thing about us, maybe. But all of these problems that we have, of these injuries that people give us, are they create an emotion in us that we call, that we've called resentment. Resentment. Resentment is really just feeling the same thing over and over and over again. And it's important to know how resentment comes about. So the best I can figure out, resentment comes when there's some kind of a real or imagined hurt that somebody does to us that because they're able to, because they have some kind of control over our lives and we don't have control over that aspect of it. So they hurt us, and then we resent that. And then we start feeling that, and then next week we feel the same thing, although the event has quit. And then next month we're still feeling it, although the event's not still happening. So with that resentment is where that comes from. And so basically resentment comes from somebody who's mishandled us in some way, or at least we thought they did. So who are we supposed to forgive? Well, my thought is we have a good opportunity to forgive anybody who's mishandled us. And it can start with parents. Parents mishandle kids all the time. And kids remember it. So one of the opportunities we have to forgive are our parents. Another one is our siblings. Don't you just know that kids beat up on one another all the time and they're not nice to one another? And then we grow up and it's our friends. And then later on it's our spouses and our workplace. So we have an opportunity then to practice this thing called forgiveness in just a jillion different areas. Well, who did Jesus say to forgive? If we look at the text, and if you have a Bible and you want to, turn to Matthew 18. And here's the question. Who did Jesus tell us to forgive? In Matthew 18, Peter asked Jesus a question. Lord, how many times shall I forgive my brother when he sins against me? That's verse 21. Up to seven times. And then Jesus said, 77 times, or 70 times seven. And then he proceeded to talk about a king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants, and a servant owed him something like $1 million. And he forgave the servant because the servant asked him to. And then the servant went to another buddy who owed him something like $20. And that guy asked him to forgive that debt, and he wouldn't. And Jesus concluded and said, this is how, and so the king put the first guy in jail because of how he had treated his buddy. And then Jesus said, this is how my heavenly Father will treat each of you unless you forgive your brother from your heart. So it's not just that we forgive a debt. It's that we forgive from our heart. So who then did Jesus say to forgive? The context of that leads me to believe you forgive the guy who asked you to forgive you. Let's see. Ask you to forgive him. The question, though, was how often should I forgive somebody who sins against me? So we can reach our own conclusions about that. Are we supposed to forgive the people who sin against us, or are we supposed to forgive the people who ask us to forgive them? Well, that's one of the type of people that we're supposed to forgive. And Luke 23, verse 34. Jesus said that Jesus was on the cross in deep, deep anguish. And he was going to die because of what the people had done to him. And he said in Luke 23, verse 34, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. So who did Jesus forgive? Them. So who can we forgive? Well, we can forgive the people who don't know what they're doing. This seems like, and has seemed like to me, that this command to forgive people is designed to keep me perpetually miserable. Do you have trouble with that? down where the rubber meets the road, and where your gut wrenches, and where the pain starts. The command to forgive, does it give you some pain? Well, it's the opposite of that. It's designed to do the opposite of that. Forgiveness is designed to free us up, because forgiveness is not just for the other guy. It's for me. It's for us. It frees us up from a lot of pain. Well, let me tell you how to forgive somebody. In your mind or on a piece of paper, make a list of your 5 deepest resentments. And if it's toward the person you're sitting beside, don't do it on a piece of paper. Now, think about that just for a second, your 5 deepest resentments that you have. Now, imagine your life if suddenly those resentments were gone. Would it change your life at all? If that pain and anguish that you live in every day was suddenly totally removed out of your life, would it change your life? I find that it would. It would dramatically alter my life. Resentments take 1,000 forms, but they have one thing in common. They cause separation. Resentment causes separation from whomever I'm resenting. John 17:11, Jesus was praying for people in the world. He was saying, I won't remain in the world any longer, but these my disciples will. John 17:11. But protect them. He asked God, he said, protect them so that they may be one as we are one. So he prayed for unity. He said, I don't ask that you take them out of the world, but I just ask that you protect them from the evil one. And then he prayed for his disciples, his immediate friends right there beside him. In verse 22, he said, my prayer, verse 20, my prayer isn't for these people, but I pray for those. Well, he was praying for his disciples, and now he prays for everybody in the world. He said, my prayer isn't for them alone. I pray for those who believe in me through their message, that all of them may be one, just as you are in me and I am in you. May they also be in us so that the world can believe that you sent me. I've given them the glory that you gave me, that they may be one as we are one. I in them and you in me, may they be complete and brought to complete unity to let the world know that you sent me. My dad died when he was 86, and I brought this up several times before, but it made a big impact on me because I had a lot of conversation with him before he died. And growing up, I didn't have the relationship with him that I had as he was dying. And my dad struck me growing up as kind of a harsh individual, pretty hard. He seemed to me like he stayed mad all the time. And that he was a religious man, and he talked about God all the time, but he talked about him as if he was mad at somebody who wasn't in the room, as if he was arguing with somebody. I don't know if you've been around that type of environment or not, but it was a strange deal. And I got some mixed messages from that. But when he was 86, he had a different look on things, and it evolved all across time, which is a great testament to the power of God, actually, to watch somebody's life change across time. And he was dying on the bed, and he said, you know, I've been thinking a lot. He said, forgiveness and oneness are the same thing. Resentment separates us, and forgiveness brings us together. So no wonder forgiveness is important to God, because unity is important to God. Unity within the family is important to God. Unity among the people we love. But we hang on to resentments because they benefit us. They help us. They help us guard against the additional hurt. Don't you know that? Resentment will keep you from being vulnerable so you won't be hurt again. That's one way it benefits us. And it also helps us maintain some illusion of control if we're resenting somebody. But it has the effect of keeping us separated from the people we love when we ought to be together. So it's God's will that we be together. So how do we do that? I'm nearly done, and I really appreciate you listening to me. Here's how Jesus did it, and here's how I think we can do it. What I really want to do is learn how to forgive people who aggravate me or who hurt me in some way. And in addition, I want them to forgive me. But one way we can actually do it is take the long view. Now, you made your list of resentments. Now, if you wanted to in your mind, you could make a lot longer list, right? Even against just one person. And then there's everybody else in the world you have to think about. So make that list. And eternity is a weird thing to me because I don't understand it. But here's something that I can get a little bit of handle on. You know the stars? I was walking a little bit last night and looked at the Big Dipper and some of the other stars. Stars are a long way off. And they don't measure them really in miles. They measure in light years. A light year is not really a measure of time. It's a measure of distance. And a light year is actually the distance that light will travel in a year. And light travels, is it 186,000 miles per second? Real fast. Light's super fast. So if you figure out how many miles light travels in a year and multiply that by several thousand, you end up how far some of the nearer stars are. Isn't that a weird thought? That's a long way. And the Bible said God covers all that with one hand. That's big God. Well, if you imagine then, you take your list of resentments and set it up on a podium, and then you go over there to the nearest star, and you look at your life and your list of resentments. And then you take what is right this second and project it into forever. And you take the separation that you're experiencing right now because you're mad at somebody, and you think that's never going to change. And that separation is going to happen from here till forever. How big is your list of resentments at that point? How important is it that you hang on to what you've listed if it means you're going to be separated from that person forever? Well, that's just one way of looking at it. It actually puts it in context for me. It helps me quite a bit. Another thing Jesus did, he was hanging on the cross and he said, forgive them because they don't know what they're doing. Well, who does know what they're doing? This unrepentant mess maker sure doesn't know what they're doing in our lives. Whether it's their children, our children or our friends or our spouses or whoever. Who does know what they're doing? And Jesus took people who were absolutely convinced that they knew what they were doing. And they were convinced that they were doing God a favor. And they killed him. And he said, forgive them because they don't know what they're doing. So how big is my list of resentments when really this person doesn't know what they're doing? And when Jesus has called us to forgive. Well, last thing that I wanted to say is that forgiveness allows us to get better. Because isn't that what we're trying to do? I really want to get better. So whoever's mad at me, I sure want them to forgive me, because it's hard to get better when somebody's mad at me all the time. And I want to do the same thing with the other person. I want to extend that same grace to the other person. When my brother was 45, his wife left him, and they got divorced. And he came to my house from Tennessee, and we were sitting there with cups of coffee on the front porch. And he was hurting. He was hurting so bad. He was questioning everything in his life, about all the failure that he had encountered and what he thought of himself. He couldn't figure it out, and I couldn't either. And he had come to me to tell him how to get fixed. And I didn't have any idea how to fix him. And how do you make up for these 25 years of mistakes? You can't even figure it out. Don't you know that he'd go back and fix everything if he could, but he can't? But he doesn't even know how. Even if he started over again, he wouldn't know how. So what's left there is a big old bundle of hurt and pain and anguish. And I'm supposed to fix him. And I didn't know what to do, so I basically just said, "Man, I tell you what, I hate you've gone through this stuff, and I just want you to know I'm on your side." And that's all I knew to say to him, which felt really inadequate, but he started grinning at me. He said, "Well, thank you, bro." I wonder if he was guilty. I bet you he was really guilty of a lot of stuff. And what did he need from me? He had already been sentenced and was doing time in his own mind, so what did he need from me? He really needed for me to be on his side, whether he was guilty or not. So do you think God will get mad at us if we take the side of a guilty person? Let's see, the lady was caught in adultery, and they brought her to him, to Jesus, and they said, "Now the law says kill her, what do you say?" When Jesus gets done talking, there's nobody left but him and the woman. And he looks up and says, "Where are your accusers?" And they're conspicuously absent. He said, "Well, I don't condemn you either. I'm on your side." Tax collectors were the most hated. Zacchaeus is the top tax collector. He wants to see Jesus, so he's in a tree. And Jesus comes down and calls him out of the tree and goes and eats with him. How many people had Zacchaeus cheated? We don't know for sure. Maybe a lot. But Jesus said, "Well, I'm on your side." The tax collector with the Savior. Two thieves hanging on each side of the cross, and one of them says, "Remember me when you come into your glory." And Jesus said, "Well, I tell you today, you'll be with me in paradise." The criminal asking for clemency from the innocent, and he gets it. Do you know who needs forgiveness the most? The guilty. Do you know who needs for me to be on their side the most? It's the guilty people. Because the saints and everybody, they're easier to be around, but how many of us run in saintly circles? Aren't we among the common folks who are ugly and do bad things and need forgiving? I submit to you that sometimes the only thing that allows us to get better is to be forgiven and for somebody to be on our side. So today I want to tell you I'm on your side. And I'm most grateful to God. And I'm most grateful to Jesus, who, although he was perfect, took the side of imperfect people and made us whole. And unless I'm mistaken, I'm among those people. And I'm most grateful. So let's stand and sing.